AI does not create culture. AI speeds up the grunt work, the busy work. Anything that says like, oh, AI is going to handle your entire sales process.
Yeah,
Every time we've A/B tested that, it fails compared to the human side with a little bit of an aid.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime professional recruiter, coach, and creator of the Chief of Staff Scaffold System. Let's get into it.
Today, I have CEO and president of, is it Anago?
Anago,
okay.
And nobody gets it right.
Well, that's why I'm stopping and asking you, because it just dawned on me I forgot to ask you how to pronounce Anago. Okay.
Yep.
And do you pronounce your name with a soft O, Pavlitz? Okay. That I can of course pronounce. Probably because you're a member of my tribe and I know how to do stuff. Okay. Let's start again. Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. Today I have CEO and president of Anago Cleaning Systems, Adam Pavlitz, here with me, to discuss how he's been able to implement AI to streamline trainings and retrainings for his teams. He's developed quite a sophisticated system, and I'm actually really excited to talk about it. So welcome to the show, Adam, and I'm super glad to have you with me today. But first, can you kind of give a window into what Anago Cleaning Systems is?
Sure. So first, Carol, thank you for having me. So Anago is a three-tier commercial cleaning franchise. So most people who are familiar with franchises are probably familiar with your classic two-tier. So, you know, like McDonald's and then the people who own the restaurants.
Right.
Ours is three-tier. So I lead the corporate office. We sell what's called a master franchise, and that would be someone who owns like a major metro area. So think like Atlanta, Dallas, LA. And then within their territory, they act like a mini franchisor in their region only. So they're selling janitorial franchises underneath their territory, but then they also act as like the day job, let's call it, of the commercial cleaning business. So they're doing all the sales and marketing and back office. Mm-hmm. And then their janitorial franchisees can focus purely on, you know, keeping the clients happy, knowing the chemicals, the equipment, and keeping the buildings clean.
So the company's been in business for 37 years. You have, as you had shared with me, about 30 corporate employees at the top level. And I think you said the master franchises usually have about 16 employees or less.
Usually less. Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones has about 16 employees, and it's probably more like 5 to 10 is probably
Got
most
it.
Common.
Okay. And then that there's 48 master franchises supporting about 1,800 franchisees across the U.S. and Canada, which is really
That's
interesting.
Right.
So let's talk about when it comes to AI. You know, there's been obviously an overwhelming amount of ways to adopt it. And while many leaders have mastered it, some are really finding it difficult. So I know you've harnessed it in a way that's actually made a difference in your workflow. And I'd love to share what you've done with leaders so they can do the same in their own companies. So if you can walk us through that process that you used to create the training videos, you know, before AI and now since.
Sure. So, I mean, first thing, you know, I will say that everything you've heard, you know, in every AI newsletter or podcast or whatever, where it's AI has to come from the CEO or it's not going to get implemented, is absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, most people on your team, they want to do their job and they want to go home and see their families. Mm-hmm. And so if it's not, you know, so they're, you know, very few people are naturally incentivized to go, you know, I'm going to go out of my way and learn the 50 new AI things that came out this week.
Yeah, right.
So it has to be the CEO that does it. And so you have to, I always joke, you know, I was always a big nerd and now nerds rule the world, right? So I go, you have to nerd out and just start playing with the stuff and require it. What we did that was pretty interesting was, thinking back on my industry, and it makes sense if I kind of give a little bit of background. Mm-hmm. In my industry, there are two levels of satisfaction, whereas every other industry has three. And so what am I saying by that? You go to a restaurant, let's use restaurants, and you have an amazing dinner, and the waitress is phenomenal, and you go, oh, this place is great. Or you have a terrible experience, right? Food is cold, waiter's a jerk. Or you have that middle of the road, like, whatever experience.
Yep.
in mine, we don't have that first one. Nobody gets to their office and goes, oh my gosh, this building is so clean. I'm going to get my janitor a birthday present.
But they do notice when it's not.
They notice when it's not, or they get in and don't notice anything and got to get to work. You know, they're not thinking about it at all. So we had to come up with a way first to say, how do we, you know, when those mistakes happen, and they will, right? At the end of the day, you know, pros to my business, it's not getting outsourced to China. Amazon's not coming to town to replace it. But because you have that person that has to physically walk in and go clean the building, but people are, we're all human. People make mistakes. It's part of the business. And so when it happens, we said, okay, this is a point where we can jump in. And if we can resolve, make it easy to complain, to get, you know, first of all, and then second, when you do complain and make it, you know, there's an issue, make it so that we can fix it as quick as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. That is what birthed what we call our software that's called CleanCom. And so CleanCom, the idea behind it is, you take out, you know, there's an issue, you take out your phone, you take a picture of the issue, it sends it to the franchise owner that's cleaning your office. They have a, it has a built-in guaranteed 2-hour response time. So you have to respond, you will get a response within 2 hours to make sure that whatever it is acknowledged, right? So someone's not like leaving a post-it, hey, janitor, will you please clean this room? No, no, it's all done. There's communication, there's acknowledgement. It has, we added built-in Google Translate, so you can speak in whatever your native language, they can speak in theirs. All private, no cell phone number exchanges or anything like that. It's all on our platform.
Nice.
And that was sort of phase one, right? Is being able to aggregate all the issues, respond to them quickly. And then we took it a little bit further with some analytics. And when that was, it's funny because you're seeing like, it was like following the technology, but we're maybe 6 months behind where it's like, okay, people just want to communicate. Now we need analytics on the communication. And then next will obviously be the AI implementation. But the analytics, essentially what it does is now say that franchisee has, you know, 3 issues in cleaning bathrooms. Mm-hmm. Well, it automatically reports that to the master franchise person who owns the region and says, hey, this franchisee is struggling to keep bathrooms clean. You should probably contact them and bring them in for a retraining in order to make sure that they can handle that so that you're preventing them from having issues at future customers.
Got it.
So then AI, right? So now, okay, that's the background, AI. We said, well, wait a minute. Why are we doing all of this manually, right? It's like an indicator, like, oh, this guy needs a retraining. That, you know, that's kind of silly. So we said, what if we could use the analytics with the AI? And so we took that further and we said, let's build an e-learning platform so that now it's all done. It's AI avatars. So it's more interactive. You see a person talking on screen. It's not just reading a PowerPoint or something like that. It's a person. I think they're a human-like person, whatever they're called.
It's an avatar.
Talking on screen.
Somebody's avatar. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Talking on screen, explaining what the, you know, what the cleaning is. There's tests at the end of each session to make sure that they've you know, validated all the information. And then you can actually use AI to say, let's serve that up based on whatever the issues are anywhere, at any customer, at any franchisee. Serve that video up and then ultimately certify them after they've completed the test as capable of servicing that bathroom again. And then spin it around and share that information with the customer. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not something any other of my competitors are doing, where we're saying, this is where we're falling short. You know, we call it the customer health portal. This is where you're falling short. We're falling short at your office. This is what we're doing about it to improve it. Mm-hmm. But we want to keep you as the customer in the loop and say, hey, you know, your cleaning right now is only at a B+, and it really should be at an A. And here's the things that we're doing specifically to ensure it gets to that level.
Mm-hmm. And that's is that a human getting back to them, or is that the AI getting back to them? Because I'm trying to figure out, like, on that customer side that you're talking about now, how's the AI helping? So what does that look like exactly?
So that the customer has direct access to that portal. So they can go in anytime and see what is going on at the franchisee level, what mistakes have been made, what issues are being, you know, fixed and reported. And they can always, obviously, they can always contact that regional office and say, hey, I had a question about such and such. But the idea is to keep it as much between the franchisee and the customer, the janitorial franchisee and the customer, and push the power and the decision-making down to that level rather than making it so that the master franchise office is just like a glorified customer service agent or something like that.
You know, one of the things I really like about your journey, Adam, is, you know, the fact that prior to joining Inago in 2009, you spent a brief period as an investment banker, about a year, and then about a year and a half with IBM before joining. And that you've moved up the food chain from like the bottom all the way up to, you know, chief executive officer. Tell me a little bit about that journey for you. And I mean, you've held like seven different jobs or something like that at the company.
I had to do it all.
Well, but the benefit of that, in for you to become the CEO, what are the benefits of starting down at the bottom and moving your way through the ranks?
To me, you know, if you know, say, you know, there's a future without Inago in it with for me, and I'm leading another company, probably the very first thing I would do is like, you know, if I'm at McDonald's, I'd like, put me on fries, you know, let me work the drive-through for a week and see. Because at the end of the day, I mean, I feel like the C-suite is so out of touch with what the customer's experience is and what the frontline employee's experience is. It's, you're making decisions in a vacuum. So I think, you know, for me, you know, it was funny, you know, when I first joined the exact phrase I was told when I joined Inago was, you've left your highfalutin, that word, I haven't heard that word, highfalutin finance job.
Yeah, right.
And your first job at Inago, I was told I'm going to be a telemarketer by day and a franchisee assistant at night cleaning a daycare. I mean, it was, you know, humbling, you know, and I was terrible on the phones. I was a horrible telemarketer. I literally had to create like an alter ego just to get through it. You know, someone thought I said, I'm Adam from Inago. Someone thought I said Alan Franago. And that became, and I got through the gatekeeper to the actual person, got an appointment. And so I was Alan Franago for a little while there. Like, whatever works.
Oh, that's too funny.
I think, I mean, big picture, I think you have to know all of the roles. What does everybody do? You don't have to be an expert. It's not about being, because, you know, the larger the organization, the more roles there are. So I don't think you have to be, you know, the best salesman there or the best IT person, or, but to just say, what do you do? How do you do it? What are the things that are your bottlenecks and things that frustrate you every day, and carry that with you as you work your way up? So then, frankly, I mean, you know, the first couple of years as CEO, I didn't have to, you know, spend 90 days coming up with my plan. And, you know, it was like, I already know what everybody's issues are. Let's start checking off these boxes and fixing them for people.
Yeah. Because most times CEOs come in and they have spent at least the first 90 days figuring things out.
Yeah.
Because they just do not know what's going on. So speaking of bottlenecks, which is a great segue. Thank you. What would you say is your biggest bottleneck to growth with Inago? Inago. I don't know why I cannot get that pronounced right.
Biggest bottleneck to growth. You know, it's a combination of things. I would say partly, you know, partly it's adding more territories, right? We still have a gaping hole in the Midwest right now. It's weird, right? Because I'm in Tallahassee, Florida. I'm in Winnipeg, Canada. I'm not in Chicago. Don't know why. Couldn't tell you.
So you do have some A level territory still available.
We literally just, I think before, since we last met, we literally just opened St. Louis, and are on schedule to open Fort Worth, Texas now. But yes, Chicago, Indianapolis, I mean, some really phenomenal territories are available in the Midwest. I think part of what's been holding us back on that level is interest rates. My competition is not, you know, my direct competitors in that regard. They're frankly a lot older and bigger than me. So no one's comparing me against, you know, Jenny King or something in Indianapolis. And they're not comparing me necessarily against other franchises even. They're comparing me against hey, I make $300K and I have this great job with benefits. Why should I leave and do this whole janitor thing?
And have to borrow money at a high interest rate.
Yeah, and exactly, and pay 7%. It's like, I'll wait. And I kid you not, a couple of interest rate cuts, and we've sold two this year, and it's, you know, a month and a week into the year already. Mm-hmm. So you go, okay, that's going to be a huge help. Yes. I think, and then from another area that was a bottleneck and is becoming less of a bottleneck is what we would say national and regional accounts. Mm-hmm. So Antigo, because it was built up very much where the master franchise focuses all of their marketing in their region.
Right.
We never historically had someone or a team that their sole role was like, okay, but what about when like Amazon or Pepsi or you know, UPS go out to bid? Who's going after that? And how are we ensuring that we can provide service across mm-hmm. the country to their 30, 40, 50 locations that they need?
Right.
And so that's something that we've actually invested heavily in since end of 2022, beginning of 2023. I mean, that's on track to essentially, I would say that by the end of this year, that will add probably 20% to 25% additional top line revenue from mm-hmm. that avenue. Mm-hmm. They're huge accounts. You're playing in their sandbox. It's not your world at all when you're dealing yeah. with, you know, these Fortune 500 companies. Yeah. But being able to play in that sandbox at all versus having to essentially decline all of that. Mm-hmm. So now you're able to get like the local doctor's office and the local schools and the big box, you know, retailers right. and shipping carriers and all that. And so it really operates almost like an entirely different industry within our industry at that level, because mm-hmm. there's a certain scale and you're at different folks that you even are competing against to win those accounts.
Right. So, Adam, I want to call out the elephant in the room, that cleaning is just not sexy. Okay.
Elephant.
I'm wondering, when you think about that, right? I mean, do people ever that are thinking about becoming a franchisor or franchisor, you know, if we think about the master franchises, they're still really franchisees and they're also franchisors, right? They're kind
yeah.
of both.
Yeah,
so,
both.
But if we think about that, you know, the customer, let's call them that then, you know, are they thinking, God, I really want to get into something super sexy, or do they just not care because it's going to generate them X amount of revenue?
I think it's overcoming that initial hurdle, that yeah. exactly what that is. I can call him out a little bit because it was a running joke for a while. The owner of our territory who owns Salt Lake City, Utah.
Right.
He's on the board at the Utah Honors College, and his wife point blank when he was buying was like, you're buying a janitor franchise, but sweetie, you went to Honors College. Like, it's like, you know, it's right. not something you think of. And so what we end up having to do to just kind of overcome that is, because how about this? If I said, who cleans your office? 90 out of 100 of your listeners.
I don't know.
People are like, the janitor, the cleaning company.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right.
So first it's overcoming just like, okay, you haven't heard of me and that's okay. But what we have done is I think we do a great job, frankly, making enough money where we can show that our new mm-hmm. And franchise disclosure documents that we have to provide. There's a thing in there called an item 19, where you give a revenue disclosure and profitability disclosure and everything like that, if you're able to. Mm-hmm. We're disclosing our average master franchise who has been open more than 1 year and is not like a resale or something like that. They're averaging $3.4 million. And so now most times people hear that and they go, it goes from cleaning to like, oh, cleaning.
Is that a gross or net? Yeah. 3.4 gross. Okay.
That's a gross number.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
But people hear that and they go, oh, wait a minute. You know, the average, mm-hmm. you know, the average, I think McDonald's is closer to like $1 million. So you have to own 3 McDonald's just to get to the revenue mm-hmm. figures of 1 Antigo. People see that and they go, okay, wait a minute. Tell me more about this, right?
Yeah.
You spin it. How about this? I usually spin it when I explain it. I say, listen, what if I told you there was a business that you work essentially 9 to 5, no nights and weekends, like, you know, like the restaurant business or something like that. You're essentially doing all white collar work. You're doing sales, marketing, accounting, customer service. Oh, by the way, average revenue is over $3 million. you know, most people go, I'm interested to learn more. I've at least, mm-hmm. you know, piqued my interest to say, tell me more. And so that's how we have to approach it.
Well, and then there's also the, you know, the salesperson in me, and you're asking a really great question, I might add, because that's what's getting the interest sparked. But, you know, I think of my over 30 years in sales, and I think to myself, you know, I'm going to be asking questions about, because I think I shared in our first conversation, I get pitched by these horrible franchise consultants perpetually, and they're just awful, awful. They're every bad headhunter is what they are, right? I look back on my business that I spent 30 years in as a professional headhunter and am like, how are people this bad? Because they're not being trained properly, right? But you know, I think when I, you know, when I would get candidates on the phone and I, you know, these are people I'd never spoken to before. You know, my whole thing was, you know, hey, I'm not going to make any assumptions about your situation, but, you know, I am working on a situation and an opportunity. It may or may not make any sense to you. Really, I'd just like to kind of start with a get to know each other conversation, because, you know, if we can do that, then I can get to understand you, what your interests are, what you'd want to hear about, those types of things, right?
Yeah.
And so many people don't ask those types of questions. Like, you're considering, you know, franchising. Being a franchisee, great. Tell me what, you know, tell me what about that interests you.
Yeah.
Right? Before somebody starts pitching you on,
you
know, on something else, right? You have to start asking questions, and people just don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
They just pitch.
I have the same like mental, call it a script that I use for every single initial franchise call that I do. And it always is like, I don't know you. I know nothing about you.
That's right.
You know nothing about me. So let's do this. First, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about who I am. I'm going to tell you about my family.
That's right.
I'd love to learn about yours. And then tell me like, so what brought you here? What got you interested in my franchise company?
That's right.
And half of that, you know, and I usually conclude that with, and now we're not strangers. So now I can talk to you about this business, because I wouldn't talk about business with a stranger. That's weird.
Right. Well, and you know what people don't understand anymore, and this is why, it, you know, every time I come to my desk, it's like all hours of the day and night, spam email and in the LinkedIn, the whole, all of that. People have forgotten how to sell, and selling is about relationships. So,
exactly.
You know, let's bring that back to AI, right? That we're talking about in this conversation, right? Everybody who says, yeah, AI can sell for you. Really? Is AI going to be able to build a relationship with a human the way I can?
No.
Down the road, hopefully long after I'm not working anymore, if that even happens. But, you know,
I like AI for prospecting, like the initial, like get me the research, find out, you know, here's the buckets of people I'm looking to contact.
Right.
And you could maybe have it doing some just of the cold outreach. But as soon as you get a human to reply, a human needs to engage. I mean, that frankly, it has to be like that, because otherwise, you know, someone's going to be telling you they want to buy the franchise because, you know, our franchise, you know, the most common reasons we hear is about like legacy. Like I want to build a business to leave for my kids or something like that. And so maybe, you know, you get someone that's like that, and then you get another guy who says like, look, this is just a portfolio company for me and I'm an investor. And all of a sudden your AI is still talking about legacy. And he's like, what's going on here? Like, you know, you lose that. And so you have to have the human intervention pretty quickly in the process. And like I said, that's what I say. Let it prospect, let it do the initial outreach, because it can do thousands or tens of thousands every day versus how many emails or phone calls you can make.
Right.
But as soon as you get a human steps in on our side for sure.
Right. Right. And that's, so I think that's really the net here, right? You know, AI is, we are being literally bombarded from every angle with AI, whether it's people pitching it to me or whether it's, you know, what this, you know, recent article in Business Insider or The Atlantic or, you know, journal of your choice, right? About AI and what's going on. And, you know, it's how it's going to just really just, you know, take over everything. Well, you know, that's another that's a conversation for another time. But the point is that, you know, you as a CEO, Adam, if you had a piece of advice to give to all the CEOs listening to this, or founders listening to this, you know, when thinking about AI for your business, kind of how, what is your advice on how should you start thinking about it for your business?
I think 2 points. So number one, I mean, right now it is absolutely the wild, wild west. So there, for every, you know, 10 new AI companies that come out, you know, every week, you know, 9.5 of them will not be here in 2 to 3 years.
I've talked about that at length as well. It's like the tech boom, right? That's exactly what's going to happen here. There will be a giant bust and most of them will go out of business. It's not going to go away, but most of them will go out of business.
But at the same time, I mean, it is absolutely something that's here to stay, and you have to embrace it, and you have to say, okay, where are the places that I think that are going to be around in the future? And and I think you can start with your hyperscalers, right? Your Googles, your Metas, you know, I think Amazon just announced they're putting like $200 billion into AI. I mean, Amazon's not going anywhere. So you go, okay, I have to know it. I have to embrace it. But then I would say, taking it further, kind of to our conversation a few minutes ago, AI does not create culture. AI speeds up the, you know, the grunt work, the busy work.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, you're not going to have anything and we've tested a lot of stuff because, like I said, I nerd out with this stuff. Anything that says like, oh, AI is going to handle your entire sales process. Time we've A/B tested that, it fails compared to the human side with a little bit of an aid. So AI is not going to, the whole AI is not going to replace your job, but people who know how to use AI are, that's true. And so I recommend everybody start saying, how do I upskill our people? How do I make sure everyone knows how to use it? But at the same time, we also, while simultaneously investing in a full, I mean, a full-blown, like, six-figure upskilling program where we're teaching everyone AI, I also just hired someone who literally is going to be our in-person sales training, sales program creation person, like, to say, okay, here's all the tools you have for AI, but then here's a human that's going to come to your office, physically show you how the, you know, the proper sales process looks like. Let's walk through and go to actual appointments together, meet with actual people, because at the end of the day, you have to invest in the human side. Frankly, I mean, think about it, right? If AI is replacing all the grunt work stuff, what is left? The human experience. The human experience becomes that much more valuable. Because now it's like, okay, I can do 80% of this junk with AI, but now I need to talk to a man or woman to get me through the last, you know, 5% of this process, because I just need to feel confident in who I'm buying from.
Yeah, you know, I mean, in my daily interactions with bots, whether it's through a platform I'm using, and they always send a bot in first. And because personally, I do not do well by having to read a shitload of instructions. I need to actually speak to somebody about this or communicate with them back and forth like an actual human. You know, and usually in a very short order for me, I'm like, get me a human, get me a human, get me a human.
Representative.
You're right, right. Representative. You know, and it's the same thing when you call these, you know, companies on the phone. You just can't get, I recently had an issue with my landline company. CenturyLink, that's now Lumen. They're trying to make so many changes that what I had to get a human on the phone for my issue, because he kept saying, use the chat. Well, I couldn't use the chat because it wouldn't let me log in on my phone. So I had, you know, after, you know, spending time that I will never get back in this lifetime, I thought, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call the line to cancel your service. That's going to get me a human on the phone.
Yeah.
And guess what? That's exactly what happened. I took my issue up with that person who could only take it so far. And I said, get me your supervisor. And I got this woman on the phone who was said, yeah, I completely hear what you're saying, Carol. I've been with the company long enough to understand this frustration that you're having. That my landline goes out every time we have a bad rainstorm. And it's because I live in a neighborhood that was developed in the late 60s. Everything's underground in copper. And none of that shit's going to be replaced. Right? They're putting fiber in everywhere. So, and, you know, so they refunded me what they tried to charge me, which was $100 to have a guy come out and tell me something they refused to tell me. So she, of course, removed it from my account. But the fact, and I said to her, I will never get this time back. That took me how long to even get to you? And this is the stuff, this is the things about AI and all this automated stuff that makes me absolutely crazy. Yeah. Crazy.
I think that what they really need with AI, and I think this is probably coming sooner than later, mm-hmm. is because we've all dealt with those bots.
Yeah.
And you know, you call in like, your current balance is, you know, $250. You're like, oh, I don't care. I'm not calling for my balance.
Right.
Yeah. But I think AI can be used to for that low hanging fruit. If someone really is calling in for their balance, fine, mm-hmm. like let's knock it out. But I think when, especially with like all the voice type services getting better and better, where you can say, listen, here's my situation. It doesn't fit neatly into your box of, you know, low hanging nonsense.
Yeah.
For it to process it and just go, this immediately needs like a tier two human support.
Correct.
You know, and just pull that through faster versus someone who's just calling in for their balance.
Yeah.
That's when I think you know, the customer service game improves, because it's like, let's get anybody knocked out with AI who's calling for a simple question.
Yep.
Anybody who starts rattling off two paragraphs, just escalate it. Just give them a human.
Right. And this is, that's such a great point, because this is what we are not getting right now.
Yeah.
And and every time, well, guess what? It's none of the seven options you just gave me. Okay. So I've got to use
my number seven.
Right. I've got to use my smarts thing. Okay. So what do I press to get somebody on the phone that can actually solve my problem? And this is the problem with, to your point, it's the wild, wild west out there, right? Again, it was the same thing during the tech boom in the late 90s. Same exact situation. And you just, when you start slinging spaghetti against the wall to see what sticks, which is really what these companies are doing. Oh, you mean we can buy this and I can, you know, lay off 20% of my people? Fantastic. Without actually looking at the customer success side of this.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, this is why customer success has become so, I hate to use this overused word, mission critical for all companies.
Yeah.
Because your customer success is where you prevent churn. Your customer success is where potentially your customers are telling you about a feature they need. And 90% of your customers are asking you about the same feature. Guess what? Maybe we should build this. Mm-hmm. Reduces churn.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's not forget about the
expand part of the business that customer success can do. You've already landed the deal. How do we expand it?
Right. Exactly. Always be upselling. We actually took the what I was talking about earlier with the performance evaluation. Mm-hmm. We took the thought process behind that and actually incorporated it into our general customer service. So now when a customer calls with an issue, not only do, you know, we have the little support ticket portal and everything. Mm-hmm. Not only do we mark it as closed and completed, but we send them immediately a simple, like, you know, like smiley face, frowny face, neutral face, you know, quick one question survey. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about the service you got? Because I could have 100% ticket closure rate.
That's right.
And if everybody rates it negative experience, you go, okay, we have to fix something. Mm-hmm. Because it's how the customer perceives it. Even if the solution was, you know, a resolution occurred, mm-hmm. if the mm-hmm. customer is not happy about the resolution, then you failed as a customer experience company.
That's exactly right. Adam, is there anything that we haven't talked about that I haven't asked you that you think is important to talk about in this, how executives, you know, CEOs bring in AI for their company?
And we covered a lot.
Yeah, we did. But I always want to ask that in case I forgot something.
You didn't ask me if I was a good cook with the restaurant example. I'm kidding. I'm not.
All right. Well, Adam Pavlitz, CEO and president of Anago Cleaning Systems. I really enjoyed this conversation. I really and I really appreciate you spending time with me. This was educational for me and I'm sure my audience.
Thanks for having me, Carol.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.